A Your Vote 2016 Maine Calling debate about question 4 on the November ballot, the initiative to raise Maine's minimum wage. Maine's minimum wage is currently $7.50 an hour. If question 4 passes, that would go up to $9 an hour next year, and then by another dollar per hour each year until 2020, when it would hit $12 an hour. After that, the minimum wage would be increased according to the cost of living. It would also increase the wage of tipped workers. Supporters of Question 4 say it's long overdue and would help a third of the workers in Maine. Opponents say it will hurt small business. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss Question 4 on the November ballot. A special Your Vote 2016 Maine Calling is next. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Television Studios in Lewiston, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling, with a Your Vote 2016 election special. Today, a debate on question 4 on the November ballot. It reads, do you want to raise the minimum hourly wage of $7.50 to $9 in 2017, with an annual $1 increases up to $12 in 2020? And annual cost of living increases thereafter? And do you want to raise the direct wage for service workers who receive tips from half the minimum wage to $5 in 2017 with an annual $1 increase until it reaches the adjusted minimum wage? Representing No on 4, Greg Dougal, who is Executive Director of the Maine Restaurant Association and Maine Innkeepers. Representing Yes on 4, Mike Tipping, Communications Director for Mainers for Fair Wages. We'd like you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Thanks to both of you for being here today. And Mike, I'm always starting with all of these ballot initiative questions with the group that has brought the initiative forward. So just broadly speaking, why did you bring this initiative forward, and why broadly do you believe that the minimum wage needs to be increased?
Thank you, and thank you for having us on Maine Public. I apologize, at some point I will slip up and say MPBN.
I will too.
we'll try and limit that. But it is a fundamental promise that we make in Maine and in our society that if you're working hard full-time, you should be able to scrape by. And for too many people right now, that's not the case. So the minimum wage in Maine is $7.50. This would raise it to $9 in 2017 and $1 a year after that until it reaches $12 in 2020. It also increased the subminimum wage for tipped workers from a $3.75 base wage up to $5 an hour in 2017 and then $1 a year up to the full minimum wage. It would also tag the minimum wage to the cost of living after that. So we wouldn't get to a point where, like we are now, where it's been 8 years since the minimum wage has increased. Everything else has gone up. It's gotten harder to pay for groceries, to pay for rent, but the minimum wage hasn't increased. So it's vitally important for 181,000 people in Maine. That's how many would see an increase with question 4. And these are people that are working very hard and having, you know, just not enough to make ends meet. They're seniors that can't retire. They're single parents who are working long hours away from their families and can't get ahead. And it's time to raise Maine's minimum wage.
All right, Greg, ask you the broad question. Why is raising the minimum wage not the best idea?
Well, I would like to say up front, number one, I am the Director of Government Affairs, which is a position change, and my apologies, I should have told you that. Change of roles, I should say.
We're not going to kick you off, though.
Okay, great. Excellent. I appreciate that. Thank you. And I just want to say that we are in support of a minimum wage increase. We've been working for the last 18 months on trying to either be part of a compromise to get one or to actually institute one. Unfortunately, we were not successful in achieving that. We do believe that the amount that the referendum takes the wage to is too great. We're looking at something in the $10 range as the final product, at least for a period of time. And I know you said you would like to talk about the tipped wage later, but obviously the biggest issue for us as the Restaurant Association is the tipped wage and the change or elimination of the tip credit ultimately. That is a huge non-starter for the people that I work with and for.
Okay, so let's start with the $12 versus $10, and then we'll move to tipped wage. Mike, why did you arrive at this amount of $12 an hour by 2020?
Sure, and I guess we should just correct, first off the bat, the opponents of the minimum wage here. They have not supported any bill to this point that has would increase the minimum wage until we put forward this proposal. So over the past 20 years, these corporate lobbyists have been testifying against every bill to raise the minimum wage, including just by 50 cents. So we think that $12 an hour by 2020, getting there gradually, is eminently reasonable. And there are lots of studies that show that that, you know, makes sense for Maine and makes sense for our economy. And one of the biggest things about this proposal is not just that it helps these workers that are making just over, you know, $7.50 up to $12 an hour and not being able to scrape by, but it also puts money in the pockets of those folks, and they're going to spend it locally.
But I'm curious about how arriving at the $12. I know that there's been this counterproposal that's been discussed, if not introduced, for $10 an hour. In some other states, they're talking $15 an hour. I think there's also an acceptance that $12 an hour, albeit a raise, is not a living wage in most places.
Absolutely. And we definitely hear those concerns. In Maine, a living wage is closer to $15 an hour. But $12 an hour, gradually, it's what we found with the consultations with people all over the state, with a long process of, you know, putting this forward and gathering more than 90,000 signatures to put it on the ballot. It's what makes sense for Maine workers, and it's what makes sense for Maine small businesses, many of them that support it, more than 600 publicly, and say that it will strengthen our communities and strengthen our local economies.
Okay, Greg, why would you advocate for something more in the $10 range than the $12 range?
Well, primarily because of some of the research that Michaels uses himself. I mean, I believe in what I heard or read yesterday in the Lewiston Sun Journal that Mike believes that this could be an issue for restaurants. And I will also take issue with the term sub-minimum wage because we are required to pay minimum wage regardless if somebody makes that for tips. So nobody ever makes $3.75. People always make $7.50.
Okay, since we're going here, I want to just make this really clear for people who may not have worked in a restaurant. The way it works right now is that somebody who waits tables, somebody who serves you, is making half of the minimum, in many places, is making half of the minimum wage plus tips. But you say if for some reason their tips don't add up to minimum wage, the employer is must pay them up to that $7.50 an hour.
That's correct. And I know Mike has said that this, you know, happens all the time or that people don't report it. But I did check with the Department of Labor before I came on to check to see how many complaints they had on minimum wage at all, you know, and not people not being paid that last year. And there were like five. So, the issue, it really is not whether people make minimum wage in tip positions. They're making a lot more than that. And I have numbers that can prove that. I know Mike has numbers that he uses that wouldn't substantiate that. But I have payroll records. I have names of people who have put forth what they make as servers and restaurateurs that have put forth payroll records so that everybody knows what those servers are making.
So is your issue not that it would raise the minimum wage for tipped workers to $5 by 2020, but that it would continue to raise the minimum wage for tipped workers up to $12 an hour eventually?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're in favor of the tip credit. It's been what we've done. So at $12, if that were to pass and that were to become the law of the land, the tipped wage would be $6. And the tip credit would be a subset. It would be $6 as well. So we're not opposed to that, and we never have been. But the margin of profit in restaurants is so small that if you start adding these additional costs, as a matter of fact, in an article in the Bangor Daily yesterday in the editorial, which I'm sure Michael had some discussions with the Bangor newspaper on that, it says that restaurants are the ones that suffer the most with these increases, that they would increase prices for every point of every 10% increase in minimum and the wage, that menu prices would increase by 0.7%. Well, this is a 200% increase in the tipped wage over a period of time. So it's impossible to actually make that kind of money up without doing some drastic things. It could be doubling menu prices, even though I know that Mike says it's only going to be 5%, maybe so per year, but over a period of 8 years, it gets pretty close to 50%, which is our number. So, I mean, there are lots of reasons why we would not want that to happen.
And, Mike, let me go back to the conception of this ballot initiative. Why was this decision made? Because it's really kind of two issues in a way. You're looking at raising the minimum wage, but you're also tackling on a whole, you know, we've done homemade callings on this whole, is it fair the way restaurant and service workers are compensated? Not just raising the minimum wage, but changing the way in which we think about tipped workers.
Right. So it's actually three parts. It's raising the minimum wage, raising the subminimum wage, and tying it to inflation. All three are very important. And I would say that there are seven states in this country that have no subminimum wage for tipped workers, which includes restaurant employees and other workers that receive at least $30 a month in tips. There are lots of states that have higher subminimum wages but don't have it even. And in those states, their restaurant industries and their restaurant employment are actually doing better than the national average. That's from National Restaurant Association numbers. They're doing better than Maine. And actually, in those states, tipping is as high or higher than in states without one fair minimum wage for all workers. So we think that's incredibly important. It's also a population that is making very low wages right now. So the median income, including tips, for restaurant servers, waiters, and waitresses in Maine is $9.06 an hour. Now, Greg will dispute that, and he'll come up with numbers from individual restaurants and say our servers are making more, and that may be true. But that's from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's the median number. That's what we're talking about for the average worker. It's working in a diner in rural Maine, trying to scrape by, most often women, often mothers. And that base wage needs to be increased because right now they're relying on tips to survive. And tips should be a gratuity. It should be what you give for good service. It shouldn't be what people are trying to scrape by on with their families.
I guess my point is that's a societal change, though. That's a different way of thinking about these kind of jobs, a different way than all of us have grown up with.
Well, I don't think it's that different. I think most people right now, when they tip, they think they're leaving a tip for good service. They don't think they're paying the base wage of their waiter or waitresses. And that's actually something people are surprised to know often, is that the base wage is $3.75. And I would say that, while it is an increase, it's not one that would be particularly harmful for restaurants. Greg has kindly enough, said some of the statistics about how low the increase would be in terms of costs or prices. And I thought that was a great editorial from the Bangor Daily News endorsing question four, endorsing raising the tip minimum wage. And I would just say there are more than 60 restaurants across the state that back question four. And just this morning in the Portland Phoenix, several new restaurants that had previously actually given money to the anti-minimum wage PAC have switched sides, have said they are supporting question four, restaurants like Eventide and Hugo's and Empire. And great to have them on board. And I think it really shows that this is an issue that, it is one of basic fairness and that people are getting on board for.
Okay, so Greg, Mike's been able to give the statistic that he believes is relevant from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. $9 and something an hour is the average wage of a server in Maine. What do you believe it is, and where is your information from?
Well, number one, Mike is very proud to talk about the seven states that don't have tip credit. But the reality of it is 43 do. And that's a fairly sizable number. As a matter of fact, nobody east of the Mississippi, nobody in New England has eliminated tip credit. We would be an island unto ourselves. It is a huge issue in that respect. And because Mike likes to refer to National Restaurant Association surveys, they have done surveying that pegs the wage at somewhere between $16 and $20 an hour. I have some rates here from some of the restaurants that testified for LD 403, which was an attempt on the legislative side to eliminate the tip credit. And, they're $18.03, $23.29, between $15 and $35, $21.09, over $20. These were all testimony that was submitted. And I will also say that there are 4,000 restaurant or food service licenses in the state of Maine. So if Mike has 60 people that agree with him, and a lot of those are not table service restaurants, as a matter of fact, most of them, I certainly applaud that. But there are a lot of other people out there that see this as the potential end of their business, at the very minimum, their business model. And it is a very serious issue. This has never been this is, you know, Mike will say, well, it's no big deal. You know, everybody will adjust. Mm. How do we know that? Because it's never been done. There's never been a tip credit eliminated by a referendum process ever.
So, Mike, the states that have already eliminated this, how long ago did they do this? So how much history do we have to study?
They've done it at different times. The most recent was in Minnesota in the 80s. There were other ones before that, and some of them have been grandfathered in for a very long time. And so we've had a chance to, over time, compare one state against another for decades and seeing how this affects their restaurant industries. And I would say that, you know, he poo-poos 60 restaurants coming out in favor of this, but that is more than have come out on the other side publicly. You know, I think it's very telling that more than 60 restaurants, more than 600 small businesses across the state have backed this referendum that really, you know, support not just a fair minimum wage, a fair tipped wage, but the kind of investment that means in our workers and in our society.
Let me ask you both this, though. Maine has a wide variety of types of restaurants, everything from very high-end restaurants with international reputations to very small, inexpensive fast food restaurants and diners. Is there a bit of a divide on this issue among the different types of restaurants, Mike?
So I think we're definitely seeing support from all different restaurants, and of course, you know, we're focusing on restaurants here because, you know, that's who Greg is representing, and I hope we get to talk about some of the other people this will affect. But one person that I talked to recently was McGinley Jones, and she owns two restaurants in Lubeck. And that is, you know, a rural area. It's one where the wages are often lower. And, you know, she was saying that it's middle-aged people that are taking these jobs and that are trying to struggle on minimum wage or just above. You know, it's why they try and pay their employees a little bit more. It's why they want a fair playing field so that everyone comes up to the right level. And I guess what I'd say is that the divide isn't between rural and urban or different parts of the state. It's mostly between in-state and out-of-state. So the biggest opponents of the minimum wage are fast food chains, our chain restaurants across the country. That's actually the largest contributor to the anti-question for PAC is Darden's, which is a conglomerate that owns some national restaurant chains. And that's the real divide here, is that Maine small businesses, they're really rooted in their communities. They really care about their employees. Most of them, and research has shown this, already pay higher wages than some of these out-of-state chains and big box stores. And not only do they want to do the right thing for their employees, but they want a fair playing field so that they can compete and grow this economy.
And Greg, I'll ask you the same question. Who are you hearing that's opposed to question four? What kinds of restaurants?
Well, I would dare say, and I'd like to start with the end of Mike's comment first, they've raised, between the Maine People's Alliance on this issue and the Mainers for Fair Wages, they've raised just shy of $1 million, and most of their money, I would dare say 75% of it, and obviously Michael will have the opportunity to correct me if I'm wrong, has been collected from out-of-state entities. We have received less than $100,000 in our efforts, and that's been pretty much one restaurant at a time. I do not dispute what Mike said about Darden's, but that's one small contributor compared to all of the other people that participated, which leads me to what he was saying about, you know, what number of restaurants you have. I've spoken with hundreds of restaurants that support this. They didn't all give money. I will admit that. A lot of them don't have money to give. And I think the answer to your question is much like Mike said, but it is a lot more of an issue for people who have smaller restaurants, independents, people who are attempting to make a bottom line. So the bottom line in a restaurant is about 3 to 5%. So you're looking at about a $25,000 to $30,000 bottom line. In the first year of this, if you include a little bit of wage creep and you include the increases that will occur on the tip side and maybe some adjustments because of the wage, it's about $30,000 to $35,000. That's like 1 year's profit. And every year it's like that till you get to the fifth year where it reduces because the regular wage goes away, increased wage, and the tipped wage continues to go up. So it's less. But ultimately, at the end of the day, a small restaurant, is going to have to pay $200,000 to achieve what this referendum is putting forth. And I don't believe that most of them are going to be able to survive that.
Okay, well, we do have to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from you. What do you think about question four on the ballot? What Do you have questions about it? This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make your Vote 2016 coverage possible, as do Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship. By MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy, on the web at MEMIC.com. And Lambert Coffin, legal advisors for Maine families in estate planning, probate administration, and will contests. Online at LambertCoffin.com.
Donald Trump has amplified one of his messages in recent weeks.
The press has created a rigged system and poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
I'm Robert Siegel. Are the media anti-Trump? We'll examine that later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. Elections are right around the corner for both of Maine's congressional seats, and there are several important referendum questions on the ballot regarding marijuana legalization, tax surcharge on higher incomes, background firearm checks, minimum wage decision, and ranked choice voting. Maine's Public's Your Vote 2016 online election resource is something to keep in mind as you make your voting booth decisions. Both Maine Public Radio and Television are producing and broadcasting Your Vote 2016 programming, and all of our programs, from our congressional debates to the Maine Calling referendum programs, will be added to the site. Watch or listen as they become available. Visit mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2016 program on question four on the November ballot, which would raise the minimum wage. We have two guests on opposing sides of the issue in the studio today, representing Yes on Four, Mike Tipping, who is Communications Director for Mainers for Fair Wages, and representing No on Four, Greg Dougal, who is Director of Government Affairs for the Maine Restaurant Association and Maine Innkeepers. Join the conversation 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We're going to start in Kennebunk with John. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thank you, Jennifer, and thanks for letting me call in. I am a small business owner down here in Kennebunk in York County, and I made a commitment a long time ago to paying livable wage to my workers. I just, like, could not imagine asking people to come in and work really hard all week and not be able to survive on what I was paying them. But there's an angle on this that I think has not been talked about nearly enough. I do support question four, raising the minimum wage, and one of the reasons is that those of us who do pay livable wages are subsidizing all of the employers who are paying wages that are between the minimum wage and a livable wage, because folks who are earning those wages very often need some kind of public support that's paid for by our taxes in order to keep their families together. They also have higher workers' comp claims because they're often working multiple jobs, so they're more likely to become injured. They're more likely to become unemployed because they can't keep up with a low-paying job, might lose their job. So my unemployment taxes are also higher. So my question for Greg is, why is the chamber so selective about when it concerns itself with costs to small businesses and taxation? I mean, they've been very public about question two, saying that it would be an unreasonable burden on taxes. But in fact, I'm being taxed by people being able to pay sub-livable wages. Why has the chamber been mute on that?
Sure. And John, just to be clear, Greg's not with the chamber. He's with the Maine Innkeepers and Restaurateur Association. But that's okay. And you know what? I'm going to read, before I have Greg answer, an email from Don, which is similar. Don says, hi, I am quite tired of picking up the tab when companies big and small get away with not paying a living wage and benefits to full-time workers. The taxpayer, you and me, subsidize underpaid workers through food stamps and medical care. It's time to actually raise full-time workers away from living check to check. So, Greg, similar comments. Your response?
Well, obviously, as I said at the outset of the show, we're in favor of raising the minimum wage. And I guess the term minimum wage is probably the one that needs to be disputed, because a minimum wage is not a living wage. It's an entry-level wage. It's something that young people come into the workforce on. There's all kinds of things that are associated with being on the minimum wage. Now, if there are people who are working that are older, as Mike, I'm sure, is going to remind me at the end of this, and there's an issue with them not making more than minimum wage, again, I think we had this discussion. It's a societal discussion that has to be done, or has to be had. But the minimum wage is currently $7.50, which is not right. But it also needs to go up in reasonable amounts, and getting all the way up to $12 is too much money. And I also, my last point will be, this is an interesting discussion. It's sort of like you did question three. This is a similar discussion. The discussion in Washington County and Aroostook County and Piscataquis County is much different than the discussion in Kennebunk, because people down there are already paying more wages. The pressure of wages and the lack of labor are forcing wages up, and that's a good thing. We don't dispute that. But we also have to look at the remaining parts of the state, and we've talked to several people who are $10 is about all they can afford to pay, and at $12 they just will either not have employees and do it themselves, or they'll have to close. So it's unfortunate that it's a one-size-fits-all. It's much like the salary discussion that we're having that's going into effect December 1st. If it was somewhat regionalized according to the ability to pay, it might be a little bit more helpful. But I don't feel that we're subsidizing anybody. I think the restaurant industry does a good job. It contributes a lot to communities all over. And again, I know Mike wants to talk about the broader issue, but I'm here representing them.
All right. But Mike, I think he makes a good point. I mean, Southern Maine and the rest of Maine, there are different economic pressures, different economic realities. There are probably many fewer people actually making minimum wage in Portland than there are in Millinocket, just because of the economic realities of 2016 in those places.
That's absolutely right, and it is absolutely critical that in many places in rural Maine that we raise the minimum wage, because so many people are making those low wages. You know, it will have more of an effect there. That's why we're seeing as high or higher support in the second congressional district as we are in the first for question four. You know, it's something that people really understand, that when you raise that base wage, you really help people across the board. And so I was talking to a woman named Ray from who worked at the Bucksport Mill for 28 years as a crane operator. And at the end of it, she was making $23 an hour. And when they closed down, she couldn't find work paying anywhere near that. Ended up working in a convenience store for $9 an hour. And her family now, her children, have to pay her bills for her. And that was never something that she anticipated. You know, that's true for actually one in three working seniors right now. They would see a raise with this minimum wage increase. And, you know, they thought they'd be able to retire. They can't. They're working hard. They need just a little bit of help. There are too many people, especially in rural Maine, where the rug has been pulled out from under them.
I think Greg's point, though, is perhaps that convenience store, if it were forced to pay someone more money, wouldn't be able to hire that extra employee.
Well, that's not what we're seeing. I mean, we have obviously small businesses from across the state that have endorsed this. And looking at the numbers, in Maine, the average retail establishment already pays their workers $13 an hour, including according to a report from the National Employment Law Project. And it's actually these out-of-state chains that are paying less, and that the average median wage for them is $9 an hour.
And
so
Greg, how
what it
about
does
that,
is level
though?
The playing field.
I was going to ask the level the playing field question. How about the argument that this levels the playing field, that those employers in Maine that have really tried to make a commitment to paying good wages have been at a disadvantage, and this will help level the playing field?
Well, I would dare say that there, and again, I'm here representing the restaurant and innkeeping industry, but, you know, on the retail side, a lot of these larger big box type employers that Mike's alluding to do not exist in those rim counties to any great degree. So these are all small family-owned businesses, and they are we all know that, you know, the definition of a small business at the federal level is 500 employees. Here in Maine, it's 50, you know, and that gives you a sort of a picture of who is actually involved in hiring people. And I'm just saying that if we continue to put too much upward pressure on labor costs, that a lot of these people are either not going to hire people or or they're going to have to change their business model. In our instance, on the restaurant side, technology is probably going to start playing more of a role in people's dining experience. Personally, I don't like that. That's just me. Maybe I'm getting too old. I don't know. But the one thing that's going to occur are people are going to be replaced with machines, because the expense for the labor, especially in this tip credit elimination piece, is going to be greater than most businesses can withstand.
All right, John, thank you so much for your call. We're going to move on to Portland and Kate. Hi, Kate, go ahead.
Hi, I am just calling in. I'd like to say that I oppose this referendum. I've been a food and beverage employee for the last 13 years, and I just really, I kind of fear that this is going to increase the burden of the business owners. Many of whom, I mean, these small business owners are people who are still in their restaurants working on the front lines, and they're working just as hard for their livelihood as their employees are. I've been a bartender for the last 10 years, and most recently in the city of Portland, and I just fear it's going to, you know, like Greg just said, cause an elimination of these positions and switch to either a counter service model where you order at a counter and pick your food up, or, I mean, even ordering through a machine or an iPad, which I've experienced firsthand, and you don't get the personal touch and the experience, and especially coming from a city like Portland that really thrives on our restaurant industry and supports like the culture and really supports our tourist industry here with how many awesome restaurants that we have had popping up in the last few years.
Okay, Mike, do you want to respond to Kate?
Yeah, absolutely. And Kate, I can hear the fear there, and I think it's you know, absolutely something that a lot of people have been feeling, and I think it's actually unfortunate that there has been some of this fear spread about this that is, you know, completely at odds with the facts. So we have not seen these kinds of bad outcomes happen when you've raised the minimum wage or raised the subminimum wage for restaurants across the country. And I will use the example of Seattle because it's one that Greg used and testified before the legislature and said very specifically, because you saw the increase there, much higher than what we're going to hear, that you will see restaurants close, you will see servers out of work. And actually the exact opposite happened. Over the next year, they had a restaurant boom, and there are much more restaurants opening than closing, many more restaurants now than there were when the wage increases started. And there are more employment and higher wages for tipped workers. So I guess I would say that don't necessarily trust restaurant owners when they're telling you some of this stuff. I think they are not, you know, necessarily lying about things, but I think they're definitely overestimating the effects of this. And these this kind of raising of the minimum wage and raising the subminimum wage for tipped workers, those are incredibly important steps forward for servers. And that's why servers, groups that represent servers like the Restaurant Opportunity Center, like the National Employment Law Project, like women's groups, because so many of Maine's restaurant workers are women, they've come out in favor of this because it's the way of creating a more livable wage for people that work in restaurants.
Greg.
Yeah, well, and one thing I'd like to, you know, make everybody aware of is, regardless of the machinations in communities, when this, on January 1, 2020, when we get to $12, we'll have the second highest state minimum wage in the country. And I did check on Oregon. Oregon's at $11.50 at that point. So at that very moment in time, it's actually at $12. The other piece that really I'd like to bring forth is, in the state of Maine, the business owner in many instances is the employee. These people don't take paychecks sometimes, or they take limited amounts of money. They're under the same pressures that all of the other people that we've been talking about and Mike eloquently has related to. But our small business people are those people. They don't have tons of money. It's not Darden's or Walmart. It's the small operators that, mm-hmm. that really struggle themselves to be able to be successful. So, I think that this young lady has very good perspective on the fact that all this money that seemingly is being made by individuals in the restaurant industry, and again, if you just focus on Portland, sure, Portland's one of the busiest places, probably in New England. Maine is in Portland. Maine is a 400 and whatever number of municipalities that have a lot of restaurants and a lot of other businesses that are going to be affected by this.
All right, Kate, thanks so much for your call. We have a tweet. please remind your guest the minimum wage was, in fact, designed to be a living wage. No comment?
Well, I guess I'd say that's certainly what FDR intended when the minimum wage was first implemented. I don't think we've ever quite gotten there, and I think there is definite disagreement about whether the minimum wage should be a living wage or whether it should exist at all. And I think we've seen these kinds of fights happen every time we've raised the minimum wage and every time we've raised the subminimum wage. We saw the same kind of apocalyptic predictions in the 1940s, you know, when it went from 40 cents to 75 cents. None of that took place. None of those businesses closed. We had actually one of the biggest booms in the economy in American history. And I think, you know, what we're talking about here, it's really a fundamental issue, and I think it's important to talk about the people that will be affected. So it's 181,000 working Mainers that would see a raise with question four, and it's the parents of 63,000 children. And one of the things that Greg said earlier that I want to address is that these are mostly not teenagers. So I think that's something that's often trotted out to, you know, to poo-poo a minimum wage increase, but 90% of the people that would be affected by this increase are 20 years old or older. One in four workers over the age of 55, one in three over the age of 65. These are workers that, you know, have worked their whole life, have worked hard, and they deserve just a little bit of help.
Okay, well, I have an email that's related to that, but I'm past the time I'm supposed to take my next break. So we'll do that break now, and we'll come back and talk more about question four on the ballot. Please stay with us.
You make your vote 2016 coverage possible, as do Lambert Coffin, advocating for individuals and businesses in Maine trial courts and administrative agencies, online at lambertcoffin.com. By the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship. Also MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy. On the web at MEMIC.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Charlie Brooker, the creator and primary writer of Black Mirror, the British TV series inspired by dystopian sci-fi shows like The Twilight Zone, but set in the digital era.
Pick a target.
Oh my God.
Two. Post their name and photo with hashtag Death2.
Join us.
Tune into Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. And coming up in about 20 minutes in our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, a rebroadcast of last night's presidential debate. That will, as a note to listeners, preempt the broadcast of The World at 3 o'clock.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling Today, a Your Vote 2016 program. Today's topic, the debate over raising the minimum wage. Question four on the Maine ballot this November. Representing no on question four, Greg Dougal, Executive Director of the Maine Restaurant Association and Maine Innkeepers. Representing yes on four, Mike Tipping, Communications Director for Mainers for Fair Wages. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Just following up on what we were talking about before the break is an email from Vernon. I am in favor of raising the minimum wage, but as the former employer of strictly teenagers, I do not believe a 16-year-old should be paid as much. We've heard from the owner of Funtown Splashtown, I believe people who have things like seasonal ice cream shops and things like that. Why, Mike, is there not some sort of special carve-out for teenagers with their first jobs?
Well, I think if you're doing hard work, the same work as anyone else, you should be paid the same regardless of your age. I don't think that should ever be, a consideration for what we pay people. And again, I'd say that, you know, this minimum wage increase, it is mostly affecting people that are middle age or older. It's 90% people that are over the age of 20. And it's in a lot of professions that I think people don't recognize necessarily make low wages. So EMTs and firefighters that are doing absolutely vital work, saving lives, and doing it for $10 and $11 an hour. Home health aides, which are an incredibly important part of our economy right now, especially as we confront, you know, demographic changes and an aging population and all the services that seniors need, you know, they're paid very low wages, and this would help give them a boost, allow them to, you know, put food on the table for their families to have a decent life.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to Nate, who's also calling from Portland. Hi, Nate. Go ahead.
Sure. I had a question about the timing of this increase. Why is it not being implemented faster? I'm a small business owner. We have 20 employees. You know, I'm that guy that Greg was referring to, that I've bootstrapped the whole business. I've at times not paid myself a salary. I'm an employee of the business. But we've found that when we pay people more, they're able to show up each day able to give 100% because they're not working two full-time jobs to make ends meet. So they're happier because they have a work-life balance. They have increased productivity. We reduce our turnover, which is the most expensive thing a business can have. So it seems like it's not just the right thing to do. It's just smart business.
So, Mike, his question, how come, why this timeline?
Right. So I do wish we could go faster. I think there are a lot of people that need help right now. I think this is a reasonable timeline for implementation for a lot of small business owners. And I do think it's important as well to talk about this in terms of what he was talking about there in terms of creating a level playing field, being able to pay his employees. That's really because he's based, you know, in a community, I think, and he really cares about his employees and about strengthening that and putting money in their pockets, and he sees that advantage generally. And I guess I'd say that the minimum wage isn't the only thing we need to do, you know, to get to that level, to get to a living wage. There are other things, and maybe Greg would join me in some of this, you know, reducing the cost of health insurance, reducing the cost of childcare. The minimum wage isn't the only lever that we should be pulling to get people to a living wage to make their lives a little easier, but it's the one that's right before us and that can make a big difference.
Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, well, obviously the caller is calling from the city of Portland again, and the city of Portland, I applaud him for paying his employees more, number one. I mean, that's an admirable thing to do, and I know certainly nobody in our organization disputes that at all. You know, the minimum wage in Portland is $10.10, and it's going to be $10.68 coming up here on 1-1, and maybe for the city of Portland that is a respectable wage, and it is something that certainly helps people to live better in an more expensive place to live. But again, it's not about Portland. It's about the whole state. And I will add, if I could, that you know, businesses, small businesses in Maine are under pressure, not only from this minimum wage increase, and especially the restaurant industry with the tip credit elimination, also the salary definitions at the federal level, doubling the amount or threshold of salary. Now, that is just like $750 is a bad number, so is $23,000. But to double it, and they actually had more than doubled it at one point, to $46,000 or $47,600.
You're talking about the new overtime rules.
Yeah, and most of our industry salary, especially in the northern part of the state, is in the $30,000 to $35,000 range. They can't afford to do this. They're going to have to do something different, either with their employees, the way that they pay them, or restructure things. And question two is also an issue for small businesses. Anybody who operates as an LLC or a subchapter S corp is going to be hit with the additional tax, even though that money may have been money that they were going to use later on to shore up their business or invest in their business. So there are losers all the way around. It makes it very difficult to operate in an environment like that.
Sure. Thanks, Nate, for your call. From our Facebook page, this is from Christopher. Greg, I'm going to put this question to you. How much underreporting of taxable income occurs with tips, and what is the anticipated increase in revenue if the underreporting is minimized with the increase in pay versus tips, base pay versus tips?
Well, that's very interesting. I would say that, you know, 15 years ago, it probably was 50%. Nowadays, almost everybody pays with credit cards. There's probably 95% reporting in some restaurants that is being done through credit cards. So it's a much different game. Are there still people that don't report? I'm sure there are. They're required by law to report everything that they make. And I believe that if you were to speak to servers, because they're the ones that are going to have to bear the brunt of this, that that you would find that they're much more interested in continuing the system as it is rather than getting just the tipped wage. Now, granted, some people may receive tips as well, but in the focus groups we did, the individual people that were not restaurant-related really felt that they would not tip at the same level. If somebody was getting paid what they were getting paid, why would they tip them additionally? So I think there is a downside for servers, and I think it's important that they look at that.
And, Mike, you say in other states the experience is actually the opposite, that people continue to be tipped well even as there's an awareness that their minimum wage has gone up.
Absolutely, and I'm happy to stack his focus group against, you know, seven states over decades of research on showing that that's not the case. It is a fact not only that tipping is the same or higher, but that the wages of service staff increase when you increase the base wage. I mean, we shouldn't have to say that, but if apparently we do, because that's under attack here. And I'd also say that, you know, that's particularly important because so many of these employees in restaurants are women. You know, that's one of the reasons that the Maine Women's Lobby backs this initiative so strongly, is because it would help to close that gap. It's because so many of them are mothers or single parents.
Okay. Yep. So I'm going to go on to Bangor and Tyler. Hi, Tyler. It sounds funky there. Do you have your radio up?
No, I
Tyler.
Not. It's just I'm in a concrete
okay,
building.
Okay, go ahead.
So what was that?
We can hear you now. Go ahead.
Awesome. My name is Tyler. I'm 21 from Bangor. I've been working since I was 13 years old. At the age of 15, I was going to Bangor High, working two jobs. And both, one I was making minimum wage at Wendy's, and the other I was making $8.85 as a home health aide, both of which weren't enough to support both me, my mother, my sister, my brother. Even with what my mother was making, it was not enough. We eventually lost a house. We couldn't afford to pay for heat. Most winters, it was an average of 40 degrees inside the house. I also worked at Walmart, making $10 an hour. By then, I had moved out and got an apartment. Quickly found out that making $10 an hour, working 40 hours a week, it was still not enough. I quickly had to find roommates. Eventually, I ended up living with seven people in a three-bedroom apartment. And then...
Tyler, can I ask you this? Is $12 an hour enough, or would it change your situation?
$12 an hour currently would not change my situation, but it definitely would change my grandmother's situation. She's 66 years old, and she lost her job. She was making about $17 an hour, and she went down to the tipped minimum wage, and she's required to live off of tips. She now has to sell her house and all these other things. Now, I am working as a CNA per diem, which means I get paid more. I'm currently making $15.50 an hour, and I can tell you now it's still not enough, because I can't afford to pay my rent, my electricity, and my utilities. However, I still have a car payment. I don't have a whole lot of credit because I am young, so my interest rates are so much higher. And then how am I supposed to pay for retirement? Or put aside for
okay,
a 401k.
Yeah. Tyler, so, I think you've expressed your position very eloquently, and I'm so glad you called. And Greg, I think that this is the person or one of the people that the question is designed to help. What do you say to Tyler?
Well, I obviously it's unfortunate that he finds himself in the position that he does, but I guess it all comes back to reasonable expectations, too. I mean, I would hope that society could find a way to make everybody as whole as they possibly can, but the guy that owns a 40-seat restaurant or a four-room bed and breakfast doesn't make enough money to be able to resolve all of these issues. If we want to help people, we need to continue to have jobs and raise the wages of those jobs. I don't think putting businesses out because they can't compete in the market that we're providing to them is going to help anybody, Tyler or anybody else. So, I mean, it's got to be, again, we support a more reasonable wage to $10. It obviously wouldn't work for Tyler. Most of the time, there's more than one person that's making money in a family. Very few people are single breadwinners these days. Obviously, some people have no choice, but it is a process that small businesses in Maine are going to be able to absorb and solve.
All right. And what about you, Mike?
So I don't think there's too much I can add to what Tyler said there. I guess I would say that this is a basic issue of families and of fairness. There are a lot of single breadwinners that are working low wages. I would disagree with that. You know, one in three single parents in Maine would get a raise with question four. And this is, you know, it's just on a basic level morally the right thing to do. And that's why it's been endorsed by the Maine Council of Churches, by, you know, the Roman Catholic Diocese, 10 individual denominations across the state. It's a basic moral issue.
Okay, so we're going to go to an email from Ian in Augusta. I understand the argument that small businesses have low profit margins and need to keep their overhead manageable in order to keep their business models viable. However, as someone who has worked for a minimum wage and struggled to pay my bills, I would argue that if an employer cannot afford to pay their employees a living wage, they do not, by definition, have a viable business model. And Greg, I think that other people have used the analogy that, you know, there are certain costs to doing business. You know, the restaurants that you represent have basic safety precautions around dangerous equipment, and that's the cost of doing business. What do you say to Ian?
Well, we're having a conversation about the minimum wage, but, you know, anyone who believes that this discussion stops at minimum wage, you know, and I don't think anyone does, and I know Mike doesn't. There are a lot of other pressures on business as well. People have to produce all kinds of, buy all kinds of insurances, produce all kinds of regulatory type, or pass a lot of regulatory type hurdles. The expense to this is not strictly wages. I think most people, if they could pay a living wage, most people would pay a living wage, but they have other expenses that they have to take care of, and they also have to pay themselves, or their family is going to be in trouble. So, I mean, the one thing that bothers me the most about this is it's always about large businesses and big businesses. I don't represent a lot of large businesses or big businesses. It's small people. They're the largest. I mean, the median size in the state of Maine is 12 rooms. So 700 inns or less than 12 rooms. Those are the small micro business type people, and they're doing the best that they can. You know, so yes, the workers deserve more. Yes, the small businesses deserve more. I realize we're in a time where maybe small business is a dirty word, but it's still the generator of jobs in this state, and somehow we have to find a happy medium that everybody can deal with.
Okay, Mike, we just have a few seconds left.
Sure. I guess I'd say perhaps to wrap it up that, you know, the cost of groceries and housing and everything else has gone up for 8 years. It's time for the minimum wage to increase. It's going to help a lot of people. It's going to strengthen our economies. And basically, it's the right thing to do.
Well, thank you to both of you for being here and for this civil discussion. It's so nice. Mike Tipping, Communications Director for Mainers for Fair Wages, and Greg Dugal, Director of Government Affairs for the Maine Restaurant Association and Maine Innkeepers. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. We had additional technical help from John Keimel, Dan Works, and John Bradford. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This program will be shown on Maine Public Television at a future date. Please visit the Maine Calling website for more details. You can find all of your Vote 2016 interviews and debates online at mainepublic.org. And if you happen to have missed last night's third and final presidential debate, stay tuned. It's coming up next here on Maine Public Radio. Tomorrow on the program, the final in our series of debates on the November ballot initiatives. Join host Keith Shortall to talk about Question 5, Ranked Choice Voting in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to a Your Vote 2016 edition of Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.